Cheek friends, this is Niels, and this month Eric and I were not able to record together due to busy schedules, fun trips and vacations. So to still give you your monthly shot of AirMachi content, we've recorded this separately.
Yep, but we're together in spirit. I really appreciate that Niels recorded some dialogue for the pod, so I don't feel so alone.
This month our main topic is Eric's visit to the Disney 100 Exposition in Munich, Germany. But before we get to that, first some news. I'll kick off with the short news about Avengers Campus. To celebrate Marvel Avengers Campus's first anniversary in Paris, since the 1st of July and every evening throughout the summer, Mantis is dropping in on Star-Lord and Gamora in their epic dance-off show. Mantis is an important character in the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise, especially in the most recent film, and that's volume number 3. So it's another example of Avengers Campus evolving with the release of MCU films and series. I love that, and I'm also pretty sure that this, well, let's say, special character will add some new dynamics and fun elements to the dance-off show.
Totally. Mantis is just a lovable character with an extremely cool look, so seeing her in the parks is fabulous. Again, entertainment is keeping Avengers Campus fresh and adding some excitement to the space.
Eric, what caught your eye this month?
It's been nearly 2 years since parkgoers were able to visit Captain Nemo's iconic submarine, aka the Nautilus. The immersive walkthrough experience known as Le Mystère du Nautilus, situated in Discoveryland, has been inaccessible due to an extended closure and refurbishment. That changed last weekend when the attraction reopened once again, albeit with several noteworthy changes. Disneyland Paris Imagineers have made several adjustments. Alongside refurbishing the decor, lighting, and soundtrack, a key scene in the attraction underwent rigorous modifications. Previously, the climax of the Nautilus visit involved a giant squid attack. However, as part of the makeover, the animatronic squid was completely removed from the scene and replaced by various screen-based scenes. A decision that fans have received with little enthusiasm online, and I totally understand. That used to be one of my favorite scenes in the Nautilus attraction. It feels like just a completely different thing now. The inspiration behind the iconic Discoveryland walkthrough attraction stemmed from the science fiction novel 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea from 1870, written by renowned French author Jules Verne. Ha! The father of all things steampunk. However, numerous references to Verne have been eliminated from the attraction, including the iconic bust of Captain Nemo located inside the replica organ from the film. Instead, a new narrative has been created. Quote, "We've introduced a new story celebrating the wonders of marine life in our oceans," end quote. That statement was by show producer Luis Doré. The panoramic porthole scene previously occupied by the animatronic squid, also known as the Grand Salon scene, now features tranquil underwater scenes showcasing various animals. These include animated sharks, dolphins, turtles, and whales. Disney has implemented the Fresnel lens tech first seen in the Galactic Star Cruiser guest room windows to simulate depth, creating the illusion of far-reaching underwater perspective. Now, this Fresnel lens tech, it's more or less successful in my opinion. It does add a certain amount of depth and distortion to the image, but I wouldn't say it simulates true unlimited depth as if you're looking out a real window. It just makes it look like the screen is a little bit farther away. Quote, "We wanted to tell a conservation story that would be more relevant today to our guests, and so now, as Luis mentioned, the new encounters are happening in the Grand Salon. The cool thing was that with that project, we worked with our animal program at Epcot, marine biologists, animal keepers, all kinds of talented and amazing people we have within the Walt Disney Company who work every day with marine life. Having these scientific resources helped give the sense of realism in the Nautilus attraction that wasn't possible before," end quote. And that was a quote by Daniel Joseph, principal illusion integrator. Also, did you guys see online? I think it was Parkerama posted that they were looking for the stock video footage that Disney was using in the new porthole scene, and TLP Report found it. It's like howardhall.com, and they basically sell all this marine life stock video footage. So if you want to own the video of that whale swimming in the porthole of the Nautilus, you can buy it online. Le Mystère du Nautilus was originally inaugurated in 1994. In the summer season of 2021, amidst the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, The venue served as a temporary meet-and-greet space for Disney characters, completely shuttering its doors and entering its extended refurbishment in September of 2021. And that was the last time folks got to experience the more or less original interpretation of the Nautilus. I think it's a real pity, honestly. I understand them wanting to freshen the attraction up and just making sure that everything looks up to standard, but I really wish Disney would stop stripping all of the Jules Verne stuff out of Discoveryland. The original vision of Discoveryland has just been completely eroded, except for the exteriors. There's just so much that's been lost with the elimination of the original Space Mountain de la Terre à la Lune, and now with the Nautilus 2, who knows what's next? Orbitron? I don't know. And of course, who could forget Le Visionarium, which was replaced by Buzz Lightyear Laser Blast, which has never really fit into Discoveryland, like, at all. But at this point, who even knows what Discoveryland is exactly? It's such a mess. Another thing that they also changed was they made the whole attraction less quote-unquote scary. So the new entrance area, it's way brighter. All the dialogues were re-recorded and replaced. So that whole mysterious, creepy submarine vibe is just gone. It's just au revoir. Yeah, I'm not a fan. I really enjoyed that attraction as a kid, even as a little kid when I found certain parts to be a little bit frightening or creepy. Part of the excitement was conquering that fear and just being brave enough to explore that attraction, and it became one of my favorite things to do at Disneyland Paris. Anyway, let's move on to something positive. Attention, space travelers! Before we head to the main topic, we wanted to quickly mention that in this month's Patreon-exclusive show, we are starting our extended deep dive series on Space Mountain de la Terre à la Lune. This multi-part exploration of the attraction and its history will be the most detailed look we've ever taken at Space Mountain in Disneyland Paris. So if you want to support the show and get access to all of our fabulous exclusive episodes, head on over to patreon.com/aeromagique. It all starts at just €2.
Okay, over to the main topic of this show, the 100th exhibition, where Eric represented Air Magique. So let's start with the first question. Eric, what exactly is the Disney 100 exhibit?
Yeah, so in a nutshell, the exhibit was designed to commemorate the 100-year milestone of the Walt Disney Company. Disney 100, the exhibition in Munich, is basically a multimedia-driven, interactive museum-like experience that invites visitors to explore and learn about Disney history, films, theme parks, and more. Visitors can look forward to seeing a collection of over 250 items from the Walt Disney Archives, including props, artworks, models, drawing reproductions, and more on that later, costumes, artifacts, and other memorabilia, all encompassing a century of Disney history.
Now we know what the exhibit is. Can you tell us something about the buildup of it? How many rooms or sections are there? Is there a certain theme or area connected to these sections?
Yeah, so right after entering the 1,400 square meter, that's 15,000 square feet exhibit, there's a short introductory text and a gorgeous projection mapping extravaganza. Different scenes from various iconic films and shorts appear in circular, Tinkerbell-ish, sparkly bubbles. There's also that quote-unquote magic Tinkerbell chime sound effect throughout the entire exhibit, which just adds to the overall ambiance. Disney really is the master of themed experience design, and they effectively create a sense of awe throughout the entire space with the help of sound design. Here's a short clip of the ambiance, so you can kind of get a sense of what I'm talking about. You're also greeted by a short animation featuring Mickey Mouse and the infamous AI/deepfake Walt Disney hologram. Only, he's not a hologram. Honestly, this is one of my biggest pet peeves. Various news outlets and folks online just calling everything and anything holograms to make it sound cooler. It's just a basic projection of the AI Walt played by an actor that looks very similar, and then some poor VFX artist had to go in and painfully replace his face frame by frame. The result is pretty solid, but the projection is definitely two-dimensional. The reason the world hologram bugs me so much is that it sets a completely false expectation. Real holograms consist of three-dimensional imagery that can be viewed from multiple angles, just like a real object in a room. This is usually achieved by way of light field photography. But I don't want to get too technical here. The fake Walt is flat as a pancake. Here's a small audio clip from Walt's intro.
There's a lot of satisfaction in developing ideas into reality. When we consider a new project, we really study it. not just the surface idea, but everything about it. And when we go into that new project, we believe in it all the way. We have confidence in our ability to do it right, and we work hard to do the best possible job. There's really no secret about our approach. We keep moving forward, opening up new doors, doing new things, because we're curious. And curiosity keeps leading us down new paths. We're always exploring and experimenting.
To be fair, they did add a scrim projection of those Tinkerbell sparkly visual effects, likely by way of Musion technology, to just give the scene a little bit of depth. Again, those sparkles are very two-dimensional, but on a plane closer to the audience. Think about the Peter Parker intro for Spider-Man Web Slingers at the Studios Park. It's the same effect. In total, the exhibition features 10 themed galleries, which focus on various topics like how to present compelling narratives, creating a musical score, and exclusive behind-the-scenes glimpses into the making of the company's characters, films, shows, and attractions. All the galleries are intricately themed with illustrated walls, interactive elements like mini-games or info boards, lots of video, and props galore. One notable example was in the Jungle Cruise Pirates of the Caribbean Film Gallery. Well, it featured two treasure chests, each with a minigame that, if solved correctly, revealed a hidden prop, which is such an unusual, fun, and creative thing to do.
Then the main question, what was your favorite section or piece of the exhibit? Or if you can't choose, which I can imagine, maybe your top three.
Totally. So there were two galleries that were primarily devoted to the Disney parks. One even featured the iconic Frontierland concept art by Tom Gillian. Another part of the gallery also featured a doll from It's a Small World, which was just so cool to get a look at up close. The doll was also housed in a display case that was mounted into a faux facade of Main Street USA. The facade wasn't as detailed as the real thing in the parks, but you totally got what they were going for and it looked awesome. Other than that, I also really enjoyed seeing the beautiful costumes, especially the red dress from the live-action Cruella film. And last but not least, one of the original animatronic heads without skin from Pirates of the Caribbean. It's just so fascinating seeing the mechanics behind the artistry.
Was there anything really unique or something weird on display, something you probably didn't expect to find there?
Yeah, I was really surprised to see the Dharma Initiative branded props there from the iconic television series Lost, which originally ran from 2004 to 2010. Lost used to be my favorite TV show, and it was great seeing the Dharma Initiative branded water bottles, cereal boxes, and rice packaging. I mean, what a deep cut and such an indirect connection to the classic Disney brand. I was completely baffled to see Lost represented there, and also really delighted because, as banal as it sounds, those are just a few items that I never expected to see in real life.
Then something else, practical stuff. How was the organization? How were the directions to and on the exhibit floors, and how was the food offering?
First of all, the food offering was non-existent, which was so disappointing. Florian was really looking forward to grabbing a cold drink before heading in, which was not possible. Seriously, I 100% expected some sort of museum-style cafe, but nada. Other than that, the organization seemed pretty flawless on the day we were there. To be fair, it was quite empty, not sure what it's like on the weekends, but all the employees were really friendly and seemed eager to help. Signage was also present, but really all you need is Google Maps. If you enter quote-unquote Kleine Olympiahalle, you'll find it immediately, and navigation in the building itself is intuitive and easy to do.
Was there any merchandise on sale? And if so, what did you guys get?
Yes, there was a ton, and it's an exit through the gift shop type experience, so it's impossible to miss. Expect to find countless t-shirts and apparel, basically all the stuff you would expect to find at Emporium in Disneyland Paris, but with Disney 100 branding. Some of the more unique items included plush produced for Disney by Steiff. And if you don't know, Steiff is a premium German-based plush toy company. It was founded in 1880, and they became famous for inventing the teddy bear in 1902, although that claim is sometimes disputed. Nevertheless, Steiff first partnered with the Disney company in 1931, producing a Mickey Mouse plush. Minnie followed shortly after in 1932, and in total, Steiff has produced over 100 different plush collections for Disney, many of which are highly sought after by collectors. Steiff Collector's Edition Oswald, Silver Mickey, and Mickey holding a dog were all on sale. They are pricey though, coming in at 499 euros, 299 euros, and 349 euros respectively. It was a little bit out of budget for plush for me, but if you're a collector, yeah, I ended up picking up a copy of the Disney 100 exhibition book for 37 euro, which was sadly only available in German. Not too big a deal for me, but I prefer to keep my Disney book collection in English for consistency's sake. It also makes cross-referencing easier. Florian ended up getting a small Mickey in Lederhosen plush, which was really cute. Also, Visa card holders can get 10% off their purchase when paying with a Visa card. So it's almost like an AP discount. That's definitely something to keep in mind when shopping there.
Okay, and my last question. Any other takeaways, like fun facts or tips?
Oh yeah, most definitely. While it is, of course, a family-friendly exhibition, I would say the target demographic is adults who are Disney fans, and perhaps older teens. This really isn't ideal for young kids as it involves a lot of reading and standing. The interactive elements are fun, and there are certainly a few simple ones that children would enjoy, but I don't think those alone justify a visit and the ticket price. I noticed a few families with younger kids, and the adults wanted to take a moment to read about a certain prop or piece of art, and the kids just weren't having it and wanted to move through the space quickly. Which, honestly, I completely understand. When I was 10, the last thing I wanted to do was look at an exhibition in a museum-like setting, even if it's beautifully presented. If you're visiting the exhibition in Munich, as an English speaker, you won't have any problems at all. All the texts are in both English and German, and videos are in English with German subtitles. Even the interactive elements like the giant screen-based info table, which could display fun facts about various topics, like Disneyland Paris, for example, had a language selection option. So kudos to the team for thinking about folks visiting from different countries. Also, I noticed that a couple of props in Munich were different from some of the press photos I saw out of Philadelphia. Not really surprising given that both are running at the same time. However, it's something to be aware of. A few examples I noticed were Philadelphia featured a Matterhorn bobsled attraction vehicle, while Munich featured a Mr. Toad's Wild Ride vehicle. Philadelphia featured the costume Emily Blunt wore in the Jungle Cruise live-action film, while Munich featured the Rock's costume. I don't want to bore y'all with all the differences, but it's just something to be aware of. You won't be getting the exact same experience in each exhibition, although they'll both be very similar since 90% of the art featured in the exhibition are reproductions. And so those are the same pieces that are shown in both locations. This would also be my little critique of the exhibition, Florence as well. We were both hoping to see more originals and reading quote-unquote reproduction next to almost every piece of art feels a little strange in this type of otherwise elevated and beautifully put together exhibit. It just deserves the originals in our humble opinion, and other museums can do it, so they definitely could too. Reading some of the reviews on Google, this was also the primary criticism for most folks. Although it does have a very positive rating overall, and again, I really enjoyed it, so.
And to conclude, where until when can people visit the exhibition, and how can you get tickets?
You can check out Disney 100 The Exhibition at the Small Olympic Hall, that's Kleine Olympiahalle in German, in the Olympic Park in Munich, until September 3rd, 2023. Tickets can be purchased over the official website disney100exhibit.com. and range in price from 20 euro to 50 euro per person, depending on the day of your visit. We went on a Monday, which is when the tickets are most affordable. Monday is also a great day to visit because it's fairly quiet and you can really enjoy the items featured in the exhibition without all the hustle and bustle of the weekend crowd. Overall, Disney 100, the exhibition in Munich, is worth a visit. You'll see several beautiful costumes, amazing props, beautiful replicas, and experience fantastic theme design. Also, Munich is just a gorgeous, gorgeous city, and it's one of the few places in Germany where you can find a really excellent Polynesian restaurant. So in the historic Bayerischer Hof, you can find a real-life Trader Vic's. So this is the thing that inspired Trader Sam's at the Disney resorts, which is really exciting since we don't have it in Paris, but it's just a beautiful, highly themed Polynesian space with lots of cool tikis, and the food is absolutely delicious. It is a little bit on the pricier side, so that's just something to be aware of, but you do get what you pay for since the food is such good quality and it's a completely unique experience that's otherwise really tough to find in Europe at this exceptionally high level of quality. And in general, Munich just has a bunch of really gorgeous historical architecture, and of course, amazing Bavarian food. The surrounding regions are also drop-dead gorgeous. And don't forget that Castle Neuschwanstein is just a few hours drive away from the city. So Neuschwanstein is the castle that has inspired countless Disney castles, and it's just a really beautiful place to visit.
Thank you so much, Eric, for taking us with you on your adventure. In the meantime, I'm going to visit Disneyland Paris as well as a Disney exposition in the Netherlands, Disney Telling Timeless Stories, which is a smaller but official Disney Archives Expo about the animation studios of Disney. Now it's time for Eric to mention our beloved Patreon members and tell you how to become a patron yourself. I already say goodbye and thank you for listening.
You guys, you can find Niels on Instagram at Capturing Disney Parks. He posts lots of really cool stuff there. If you just found us, be sure to subscribe to Airmagique on your favorite podcasting platform to never miss a future episode. You can also follow Airmagique on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and check out our website, airmagique.net, for all the latest Disneyland Paris and European theme park news. Please consider supporting the show on patreon.com/airmagique. You get access to a completely new exclusive episode every month, and it really helps out a lot and keeps the show running. Before we go, we did want to thank some of our patrons, and you can also get in a shout out at the Sequoia tier. So thank you to Simon, Jen, JB, Jerry, Gray, Andy, Jen OB, Jordan, and Phillips. Stay safe and have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. My biggest Disney regret is still not having gotten the chance to ride the original De La Terre à la Lune. I've seen all the footage I could get my hands on and all the photos, and it looks so awesome and feels like such a consistent experience that really elevates Discoveryland. And then Mission 2 came along, which I did get to ride and I really enjoyed. And I must say, I did like that one a lot more than Hyperspace Mountain because it still felt like it was more consistent within the land storyline. Although it did already break certain design aspects, which, you know, was a real pity. Overall, they just tried to make it feel more modernized and contemporary, and that doesn't really fit the original steampunk aesthetic. And then, of course, Star Wars Hyperspace Mountain came along, which I just am not a fan of. The attraction's exterior does not match the interior at all. The queue, it just feels like it's been slapped together. All in all, this feels like it should have been a temporary overlay that lasted 3 months tops. Like, no more than that. But it's still here after all these years. Oh my gosh, I can't believe it.
That was just a short preview of the full-length Patreon-exclusive show. You can get instant access to this episode as well as Disneyland Paris Hacks 2.0, Disneyland Paris on a Budget, and the Discoveryland Deep Dive, along with all of our other fabulous Patreon-exclusive episodes now on patreon.com/airmagique. See you there!